Welcome, everyone. I'm Andrew Thompson, General Manager of CFMG Capital, and I'd like to welcome you to the second episode of Smart Capital. We're always looking for new ways to communicate with our growing community of investors to keep them up to date with the latest happenings at CFMG Capital and the world of wealth generation. We started the Smart Capital podcast as a forum for all sorts of discussions and to provide some insight into how we approach investment management and the opportunities we see. Each month, we'll be inviting a different guest to have a chat about their area of expertise to help you on your journey to financial freedom. Our guest this week is Duncan McPherson, our Manager of Acquisitions and Analysis. This episode, we are going to explore the site acquisition process and how CFMG Capital goes about finding development sites that serve the needs of buyers and our investors. I'll get Duncan to tell us a bit about himself. Welcome, Duncan.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. I'm a Sydney-raised bloke who moved up to Queensland for university at Bond Uni and decided never to leave, and have now been at CFMG about 7 years now after spending some time at other land developers such as Orchard Property Group and Villa World. And I was lucky when I first joined Villa World that I was placed in the acquisitions team and have stayed in that part of the business everywhere I've been.
So why do you like acquisitions over other areas of property development, or is it just something you sort of fell into, like you said?
It's something I fell into, but it's also part of the business I really enjoy. To be in acquisitions, you need to understand how every part of the business works, from the initial transaction itself to how the site will get developed, and finally to how the lots will get sold and how much they'll get sold for.
Yep, certainly. If I wasn't in the role I'm in, acquisitions is always the area that's probably interests me most. But so what does your day-to-day role look like?
My day-to-day role involves identifying and running analysis on a number of given sites, and that includes investigating the zoning and infrastructure with our various consultants, negotiating contracts with agents and landowners, and running in-depth feasibilities to assess the profitability of any site we do consider.
Yeah, I mean, probably people, little known factors, people won't realise that someone like Duncan probably looks at 200 different things to only buy five, so it's a pretty time-consuming process. But there is a popular saying in the development industry that you make your money in the buying and not the selling. We do invest a large amount of time and resources in the acquisition process because it's critical to project outcomes. Our experience shows if you overpay for a site, it's very difficult to extract value along the different stages of the development process. But if you buy well, you can extract value at every stage. Buying sites that represent good value is really important for a number of reasons. Duncan, can you perhaps give us, go through some of those reasons for us?
High profit margins. So, yeah, obviously that's the most important thing when acquiring any site, and that includes acquiring land at a lower cost. It increases the potential return on investment by reducing the overall project spend and allowing for greater profit and returns to our investors once the development is completed. It also provides you greater financial flexibility through lower acquisition costs, freeing up critical project components such as design, approvals, construction, or unexpected contingencies. It's also important to have improved feasibility and viability. This includes cheaper site acquisition, making it easier for a project to stack up financially, especially when markets begin to become challenging. Acquiring land at a lower cost increases the potential return on investment by reducing the overall project spend. That allows for greater profit and returns to our investors once the development is completed and sold or leased. Lower acquisition costs also free up capital for other critical project components that include design, approvals, construction, or unexpected contingencies that improve cash flow and project resilience. Cheaper site acquisition makes it easier for a project to stack up financially, especially in challenging markets or when dealing with rising construction and finance costs. Developers who secure sites below market value can offer more competitive pricing or create more attractive projects, standing out in the marketplace and accelerating sales and leasing. By lowering that entry cost, developers better absorb project delays, regulatory hurdles, or market downturns without jeopardizing the project's overall viability.
So I guess we're, without stereotyping too much, the old saying, buy low, sell high, applies here. seeing the importance of buying development site at a good price, it is easier said than done. We'll probably get Duncan to go in a little bit about different ways to find a site, because certainly in my 20 years in the business, this process has evolved significantly. When I was a young buck watching the acquisitions guys go out, there was just a lot of driving around, door knocking. We used to call them the old Farmer Joe acquisition. These days, vendors are a lot more educated. They've got agents knocking on their door left, right, and center. There's land brokers, land vendors. So the old needle in a haystack certainly applies. It's very rare that you can buy a site significantly undervalued like you could 20 years ago. And it takes a lot of expertise and a lot of legwork from someone like Duncan. So tell us a little bit about the different ways you find our sites, Duncan.
Yeah, as you said before, we might look up to 200 properties before we acquire maybe five of them, and that's even on a good transaction level. Some of the ways we identify sites, we look beyond the obvious locations, so focus on fringe suburbs, emerging growth corridors, or overlooked pockets near infrastructure projects, areas with planned rezoning, transport links, or population growth forecasts of often hidden potential. We also need to understand zoning and planning rules. So sites that appear low value on the surface may actually have redevelopment potential due to favorable zoning. Closely monitoring state priority development areas and local planning schemes for each local government area assist in identifying sites that others may miss. One of the big ones is obviously targeting off-market opportunities. Any site that does come on market and is listed online with the big agencies, everyone's going to be having a look at that. So it's much harder to acquire and much harder to acquire at a price that works for us. So we target off-market opportunities quite often here at CFMG. Many undervalued properties are not publicly listed. So we build relationships with local agents, town planners, engineers who will bring our sites directly. And we also do need to foster direct relationships with individual property owners. So we do still door knock out there, Tomo. And we also utilize direct mailing campaigns to find owners willing to sell quietly.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that we obviously off-market opportunities are what we would consider gold in this market. What's considered off-market these days is probably debatable. Certainly, a lot of agents will bring off-market, in inverted commas, opportunities to us, but they've also taken that same opportunity to 10 other developers. So while they haven't put in a paper, I would say that's definitely still on market and it's a competitive bidding process. So the really good off-market opportunities that sort of Duncan's had some success in finding over the years are those ones where he's literally just knocked on a door. Someone hasn't, realized the value of their land. We've gone into a negotiation. And we've been able to get, secure the land without any agency involvement, which obviously drives up the price, both because of a competitive purchasing process, but also agency fees. Those off-market opportunities, direct with vendors, they're always the best outcomes. And often, people might cynically think it's best outcome for us, but usually it's actually the best outcome for the vendor as well. And, those things are few and far between these days, but they're the real nuggets of gold that we love, when Duncan stumbles upon those. So I guess the main goal of CFMG Capital is to acquire strategic residential development sites, and they meet some really strict investment criteria. And that enables us to provide attractive investment opportunities to our loyal client base. So, our investment criteria is really important to us because it's not just in the site acquisition and developing our, developing and selling the land. We've gone out with a certain mandate, if you will, about how we will invest our investors' capital. So we want to generate an attractive return to both CFMG Capital investors and the CFMG Capital business itself. And in order to achieve this, a consistent flow of new acquisitions are required. So the primary challenge is to ensure they meet that clearly defined investment criteria, which underpins everything we do. And I just want to maybe get Duncan to go through some of that criteria, because it does go through slight changes, but generally speaking, what's his main criteria when assessing a development site?
As you said, every site is unique and will follow different criteria, but generally what we look for when assessing a site is proximity to major capital cities such as Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane. As you're aware, we have quite a bit of a presence up in southeast Queensland, so we try and stick close to these major hubs. These major hubs are where the population growth does occur. So due to the fact that we're mostly working in emerging growth corridors, we need to be where future houses are being built. So that includes, you know, being close to existing and proposed competing land estates, close to key planned infrastructure projects, and places where employment opportunities are rife within the area. Sites also need to be close to schools, have family security, transportation links, and recreation as well. We also, more than anything, need to achieve a profit margin for both the company and our investors. So we forecast a 20% development margin before payment of any fund management fees. And subject to the discretion of the board, we also need to purchase a site that is equal to or less than that of an independent valuation.
So yeah, Duncan, you mentioned your first one there was proximity to a major capital city. Certainly in my time, you know, over the last 20 years, that being a major, driver of growth or driver of sales and interest in projects probably reduced a little bit. And I'd say that's probably the case in your acquisitions process as well. So when we say proximity to a major capital city, obviously we want to be near a major population hub. But certainly when I started marketing properties 20 years ago, you know, 20Ks, 30Ks from the CBD would be front page of the brochure. Now it's not as important. Those major growth corridors, like let's call it the Logan Growth Corridor or upper West Caboolture, 90% of the people living in these areas don't work in the CBD anymore. So it's more important to be near major employment hubs, decent public transport, and, you know, all the other things you need in your life that Duncan went through there with, you know, schools and education and new employment hubs. So while we do look for proximity to those major capitals, in terms of from a selling point of view, not so much an acquisitions point of view, it's not as important as it used to be because the residents of these estates no longer really find their way into the capital city very often. I mean, until I started working in the CBD recently, when we moved to offices, I hadn't had any need to be in the CBD for any reason for nearly 12 months. So, and I only live 10 Ks away. So that's certainly a change we've noticed in the selling of the land, not so much in the acquiring of the land. And then I guess the more boring aspects that Duncan has to consider, or you have to consider, mate, is obviously we want to forecast development margin before payment of our fees. So we tend to target 20% or above. And the last one, I guess, is probably certainly one that really can be a downer in Duncan's process. You know, he can tick every single box, all the criteria we've gone through there. But when it comes to the final hurdle and we're going to purchase a site, it's very much up to the discretion of the board. And if we don't get a valuation equal to or greater than our purchase price, we typically won't proceed, which is pretty tough on Duncan if he's done all that work and some independent valuer just without any real recourse decides that they feel the value's not where we see it, even though we're obviously the expert. So that's probably the hardest point. I don't speak for Duncan, but it's probably the hardest point for him in his process or his employment. But also, like, throughout the most recent period of what we would call a little bit of economic uncertainty, CFMG Capital have taken a more conservative approach to site acquisition and identification than is probably normal. So we've had a strong focus on opportunities with longer-term settlement, a few smaller boutique opportunities located in some premium locations or infill locations. But probably the biggest focus for us, even in not just recently but over our journey, is just looking for sites that are immediately adjacent to or very close to existing CFMG Capital communities. And the reason for that's pretty obvious. We've proved the concept. We've proved the viability of the project, the saleability of the project, and often it's just an extension of work we've already done. So, you know, don't want to pump him up too much, but Duncan's done a really good job over his time in basically just buying out the neighbours on quite a few sites or projects that we've done. So moving on from what, you know, arguably could be the boring stuff, let's get into maybe a case study. You know, what's a site that you've, or a couple of sites that you found, you know, you enjoyed the acquisition process? I know one that we might talk about, you know, we talked direct to the vendor over a 5+ year period, multiple different staff, including myself, had some contact with him. And in the end, over 5 years, I think we got the job done. So Matt, that, without, you know, going too far into it and stealing your thunder, maybe start with that one.
Yeah, as you mentioned, what we've been targeting recently is, you know, the smaller boutique opportunities, premium infill location, and if, yeah, directly or in the vicinity of existing CFMG communities. One that ticks all three of those boxes is our recent Gardner Road acquisition, as known as Mayfair Lane. We initially acquired the neighbour back in around 2018 or 2019, and it was a very successful project for CFMG and our investors. And at the time, we initially tried to buy that neighbour, but was unsuccessful. So as you mentioned, we kept in contact for him for up to 5 to 6 years, meeting with him frequently with both yourself and other members of the CFMG team. And at times, it seemed quite unlikely we would purchase the property, but you know, given our persistence, we were finally able to secure the property. So you know, when we did get to the stage of satisfying due diligence on that property, that was particularly satisfying, given all the work that had gone in and into securing the site over that amount of time.
Yeah, and look, it's without going into too much detail, fair to say the vendor of that site was a little bit left of center. You know, he was actually the original landowner, so it's a heavily developed area. Over the last sort of 40 years, it's been heavily developed by a number of developers. All the big players have been there, and this particular individual was the original landowner for almost all of those sites. And he probably felt that he hadn't got fair value for his original large sale. So, and he was sitting, you know, he's well into his 80s. He was sitting on the last pocket of a few hectares of land left, where, you know, he'd originally had, you know, over 100 hectares in the area. And, you know, he wasn't willing to give it up anytime soon. But in the end, it was probably more, I'd say, you know, again, at the end of the day, we paid fair price, but I think our persistence and our relationship building and Duncan's relationship building with that particular vendor, that probably played a greater role in getting that deal done than price alone. And sometimes that sort of the ability to connect with a vendor, meet with them, talk to them on their level, not feel like you're ripping them off, that's probably an undervalued part of site acquisition. Certainly, we had some strategic advantages being the developer next door. But in the end, I think that one was probably a tick, not just for identification of a site, but also really being persistent and managing a relationship with who could be considered somewhat a difficult vendor. But in the end, everyone shook hands and we've got the deal done, and it's a really good result for the business and the vendor. So, you know, winners all around there. I guess moving on from that one, what do you think are probably the most important terms of any acquisition, or I guess just highlight different structures that we use to undertake acquisitions? Because, you know, we've got joint ventures, we've got put and calls, we've got profit share arrangements, all sorts of different structures. What are, I guess, highlight some of those different structures, and why is it so important to get the terms right?
Yeah, as you said, it's really important to have different structures for each development site, because each acquisition is very different. For instance, on our larger sites, such as our recent Bellmere acquisition at 100 Stern Road, we're using a JV structure there, so a joint venture structure there, and that's due to the amount of capital that we'll need to raise for that site. So, you know, the bigger the site, the more chance we are of you know, using a JV structure like that. But that's not something we typically do on most of our acquisitions, and it really depends on a case by case basis. So, you know, some sites have development approvals in place and already located close to infrastructure. So these acquisitions can be bought on shorter settlement timeframes and then cleaner deals, where we can do a lot of our due diligence work up front.
I guess probably one that comes to mind for me that's, again, you know, to use the term a little left of center, is we had one in Brisbane Downs. And I think you it was quite a while ago now, so it might have been before your time, but you know, we bought a, I think it was about 10 hectare site in Brisbane Downs. The vendor had a beautiful big house in the middle of this 10 hectare site, but they wanted us to develop all the land around them and then retain their house at the end of it. So I can't remember all the details, but my memory serves me is that we bought the whole site off them, including their land. Their little block with the house around it got carved up as part of the development, and then they purchased their house and their block back off us. Yeah, we have seen a couple of little ones like that. Were you involved in that one?
I wasn't involved in that one directly, but happened to be that one of the neighbours there at Brisbane Downs, which I ended up targeting later on, was looking for a similar structure and didn't end up going forward there on that structure. We were able to secure it without them purchasing a portion of their property back, but it's definitely something we see quite often. Obviously, we'd rather just acquire it ourselves and not deal with the drama of running separate development applications to, you know, get them their slice of property back before we inevitably develop it the rest of the parcel ourselves. I think
it's a good one because it highlights the flexibility and creativity that we can supply or provide to get a deal done. Certainly driving through that one, you know, it's always reminds me when I go through that estate, because there's this giant big house in the middle of on a big block in the middle of this little estate, the king of the castle, so to speak. So before we wrap up, Duncan, you mentioned the Bellmere site. You know, that's the biggest acquisition this business has ever undertaken in my time or in the business's time. Can you run us a little bit through that one?
Yeah, so it's about 1,300 lots now, so definitely the largest site we've done by a fair margin. And as I touched on before, some development sites have approvals in place and are located close to infrastructure. However, with this Bellmere site, we acquired it initially without any development approvals in place and with infrastructure planned, but not yet readily available. So we began acquiring these sites about 4 to 5 years ago. And, one after the other, every 12 months, 18 months or so, we acquired a new one and able to, build up, an amalgamation of about 5 to 6 titles all together in one. And these acquisitions were purchased on put and call options or longer term contracts with settlement timeframes of up to 4 to 5 years. This enabled us to get time to get approvals in place and to wait for or build the infrastructure needed to service the site. So these acquisitions will often have longer due diligence periods, so we can work with our consultants, meet with council to identify and investigate all of the risks associated with the site before proceeding the contract to an unconditional status.
Yeah, no, that's probably something we didn't touch on earlier, Duncan. It's, I know there's another one that we've been working on for quite some time that I don't think is proceeding, but probably some of the more successful ones or the bigger sites do require, typically you're not just buying off one vendor, it requires 5, 6, 7. And I think there was one Dunk's been working on, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think it's going to proceed down to Park Ridge, but I think he was working with 12 or 13 different vendors at once. So it is a long shot to get 13 people to agree to the same thing.
We're still looking at that one, Tomo.
Good.
It's still early days, but we've managed to secure a few of those properties. And hopefully over time we'll be able to get enough to make the site stack. But as you said, it's sometimes you do spend a lot of time trying to get all these properties together and it just doesn't work.
Just comes down to one greedy person sometimes, doesn't it? You secure 12, you need the 13th. That 13th person, it's very dangerous if they know how valuable their signature is.
It's the name of the game.
And, they might, that can become, create some neighborly disputes if you've got 12 people agreeing and they're planning their retirement and the 13th person's holding out for more money. So sometimes you better you might be better left on the sidelines and let the neighbors to duke it out and come up with a solution. But certainly they're probably the more challenging ones, but also some of the more rewarding ones. But I guess we'll wrap it up there, but I'll probably love my final question is, how does a good purchase price or what I call a high value purchase price — we don't like to use the word cheap — but how does a good purchase price support investment returns for our investors?
It builds better value for our end customer. So, you know, the mums and dads that end up buying our finished lots and building homes on them. It also importantly delivers better returns for ourselves as developers, which in turn builds better returns for our investors who invest in each of our projects.
Yeah, so I guess in summary, buying a site well, and like I said right at the start, the money is made in the buying, not in the selling, but buying a site well just improves overall development outcomes for every stakeholder across the board. So I don't think I could, you know, I don't want to pump him up too much, but I don't think I could underline the critical nature of Duncan's role in CFMG Capital business any more than we have in this podcast. So making sure Duncan's buying sites well is critical to our success. So all our investors out there should thank Duncan for the solid returns they've been achieving for the last 10 years, because 90% of the time that's a site that Duncan's put 12 months of work into. So thanks, Duncan, for coming on board.
Thanks for having me, Tomo.
And next time you're at one of our Q&As, make sure you seek him out and shake his hand and thank him for some of those solid returns you've been getting.